Okay, we're going to begin here on the top of Kuf Nun Gimel Amud Aleph. The Gemara is continuing with the last sugya that we discussed, which is how can you have, according to Shmuel, you can have a gift that is irrevocable, at least according to the Lashon of Pumpadita. According to Lashon of Pumpadita, if one does, number one, has a Matnat Shchemira, plus a Kinyan, plus Zichalo, if you have all three of those items, then the gift becomes irrevocable. So on that, we know that the Rashbam believes, what does it mean, Zichalo, means that he gave him the shtar. And according to Tosafot, we saw that Zichalo doesn't mean giving the shtar, but he documents the fact that he told him to make a kinyan, meaning either he did it through a third party's mezaka ayyadei acher, or he told him lechazeko knei, whatever the lashon is that's found in the shtar is evidence to the fact that there was another kinyan that happened. So in this case, it's an irrevocable type of gift. So this is how the kanamine. So there was a case like this where someone gave a gift in such a manner. Atta the kamei d'ravuna, he got better, meaning that he had granted such a gift, and then he got better. He was amod mecholyo. He survived and he didn't die, and now he wants to revoke the gift that he gave because, of course, the gift is only intended for mita. He says, but Rav Huna says to him, Amar Ma'ivadlecha, what can I do for you? Had you done your matnat shemira like anybody else does it, what does that mean? Either you just give the matnat shemira, or you write it down in a shtar, a daidiki, or even if you do a shtar with a kinyan, or just a kinyan by itself, all of those items make it a matnat shemira that's revocable. That you can, if you get healthy, if you survive, then you don't grant the gift. But over here, you did it in such a manner that it becomes an irrevocable gift, and I can't do anything for you because you didn't do it the normal way that people did it. Since you went out of your way and did all of these extra things, it meant that your intent was to grant the gift even if you survived this sickness or this ailment. So now, in summary, we actually have that Shmuel had a number of memrot over here. It's actually about four or five cases here, which Shmuel commented on. And if we go through, if we take over the last daf or two daf, we take all the memrot of Shmuel and put them together, we get a picture of matnat shchemira according to Shmuel. The first one is that a matnat shchemira that didn't leave anything over, that he has lo she'er she'esh ba'kinyin. There's a case of matnat shchemira gives kula, and it has a kinyin. In a case where he was no zichalo. So it's just a regular matnat shchemira kula, and he made a kinyan on it. There, Shmuel says, that lo edunba, I don't know what to do with it. Meaning that because we're uncertain as to why the kinyan was there, is the kinyan there to strengthen the case? Or is the kinyan there to say that you only acquire it through kinyan, and there's ain't kinyan achar mita, or ain't shtar la achar mita? So in that case, Shmuel is going to say, if you simply give over a matnat shchemira kula, but you do it with a kinyan attached to it, and there's no description or understanding what that kinyan is for, in that case, you will not be able to collect on that matnat shchemira because we don't know what the kinyan is, and the gift may never have been effective. That's case number one that we know from Shmuel. Case number two, we know from Shmuel, which is in yesterday's daf, that if he does the kinyan liyapik kocho, if he does it to strengthen in his hold or his claim here, then it becomes a good gift because we then know what the purpose of the kinyan was, and that's what we saw yesterday. B'miyafik kocho, in the cases where he writes specifically that the kinyan is here to strengthen, or the star is here just to be evidence to the fact that he's granting the gift. In that case, Shmuel agrees that he does know what to do in that case. In that case, it's a good matnat shchemira, and we don't have to worry about it. But if he survives, then the kinyan was only machmat mita, and therefore he can revoke or he can renege on that deal. Because there was only a kinyan. The kinyan was there to make it better for the recipient. That's only if the recipient's actually going to get it. He only gets that if the shchemira passes away. If the shchemira doesn't pass away, the gift is never granted. So that's number two according to Shmuel. Number three that we have according to Shmuel is a shchemira that says, k'tvu v'tnu mane l'ploni, says write down and grant this money to someone else. Then even if he passes away, we still give that individual the money after death. What about the problem of Kidvu that they're going to do it? Maybe he was thinking through the shtar he's going to give it to him or through a kinyan he's going to give it to him. And that doesn't happen after Mita. So we said again yesterday that was Miyafik Kocho. That's only when it's clear that the reason he's saying to give a shtar or the reason that he's saying to do a kinyan here is only to improve the situation for the recipient. But he intends to give the recipient the gift, and therefore you can give the gift even Achar Mita because he acquired it automatically because of Matnat Shchemira when he dies. Once again, if he survives, if he does not pass away, he can revoke or renege on that gift because it was given only Machma Mita or Machma Shchemira. So the next case is the case where Rav and Shmuel argued yesterday, which is Kata Vizika at the Shtar, that he wrote it and then he was Mizaka the Shtar. Again, Rashbam Lashitato, which is Zika, means that he was Mosea the Shtar. Tosfot Lashitato, which is that Zika means that he writes or documents in the Shtar another Kenyan that was done. In that case, Rashmuel says it's still a Matnat Shchemira, that still qualifies or classified as a matnat shkemira. If that's the case, the second, if he did a number of these, only the last party will get them. And if he survives again, he can renege or revoke the gift. The last case, which is the case that we just read about, that Shmuel comments on, is a case where he did, not only did he give him a shtar, he did a kinyan, and he did zichalo, he did all three of them. In that case, it's an irrevocable gift, and even if he survives, he's unable to get it back. So that means that according to Shmuel, there's the two extremes are, one case where it's an irrevocable gift is where you use a shtar, a kinyan, and zichalo. In those cases, it's an irrevocable gift. In the case where you have a shtar and a kinyan and no documentation or understanding what the kinyan is for, Shmuel says that the matana doesn't go through because we're not sure what he was intending with the kinyan, whether he meant to give it derech a kinyan, which can, or the shtar, which can happen after a mitah or not. And then in the middle cases, which are the other three cases that we discussed, is either a shtar with zichalo, or a case where he writes the kinyan and writes miyapik kocho, right, and he does it to improve his situation. Or he says, Kidvu v'tznu mane l'ploni, where we know it's miyapik kocho, which we know that the shtar is only given to give evidence to the fact that he granted the gift. In all those cases, Shmuel says the gift's a good gift, but it's a gift of a matnat shkemira. So therefore, if he survives, he's able to revoke the gift. If he passes away, then the gift is granted. So those are the five things that we learned from Shmuel over these memnot, and gives us a picture, a broader picture of matnat shkemira. What we're missing over here, which isn't mentions is mitzabe machmat mita, which might throw a monkey wrench into some of these situations. But leaving that aside, here is a good summary of the sugyot that we've seen. Okay, now the next case. We have this gift that was granted. It's a matnat shchemira b'miktzat, granted some of his property to an individual. And there was a kinyan here. So now, whether he survives or doesn't survive, right, the gift goes through because it was a matana b'miktzat, and you have a kinyan, which is required. A matnat shchemira b'miktzat is really a matnat bori in the end, and therefore you require a kinyan, and he has the kinyan. So it should go through, it should be an irrevocable gift, and shouldn't be a problem at all. But the problem is he added in a lashon of b'chayim u'b'mavet, in life and in death. So why did he write the life and death? So Rav Amar, you came out not shkemira. The fact that he wrote life and death transfers or changes it from a matnat bori to a matnat shkemira. Shmuel Amar, you came out bori. No, this remains the same way. Why? Rav Amar, you came out not shkemira. Why is it matnat shkemira dichiv ba bimavet? Because it says in death. When death means achar mitar kamarle, he's indicating my chama mavet. He's saying that I want this to take hold when I die. When if it takes hold when I die, that's what's called a matnat shkemira. So it's basically equivalent to maybe mitzave machmat mita. It's basically giving clear instructions that he wants it to work like a matnat shchemira and not like a matnat bari. And therefore, this is a matnat shchemira. Shmuel Amar, he can matnat bari. Shmuel says, no, it's a matnat bari. Why? Because dir baba chayim. Because it says alive. Michayim kamar. He says he wants it to be effective now. When he's alive, it's effective now. That becomes a matnat bari or remains a matnat bari because it's a matnat shchemira b'miksa with a kinyan. That's a matnat bari. So why does why in the contract does he write, or why in the daidiki does he write Michayim bechayim ubimavet? So that Shmuel explains is Michayim is commander miata viadulam. So he says Michayim ubimavet means from now and forever. From now and forever, this is yours. It's your gift. It's a lashon of, you know, saying that this gift is granted to you forever. It's a nice way of saying miata viadulam. So he just says Michayim ubimavet. That means miata viadulam. It's the same thing. So now, but looking back at Rav says that the word mavet dictates over here. So the word mavet tells you that the gift is only in death. So then why did he write mechaim? Right? So that, why did he write the word mechaim? So it could be two things. One is it could be siman, could be an indication of when he gave the instructions about this gift. That means mechaim, now I'm giving the instructions, but won't be affected by mavet. Or the Rashbam calls it a siman tov. That he says, what it means, b'chaim b'mavet means that I'm in life and in death, meaning that I should live and be well. B'chaim means I should live and be well, b'mavet, but if I die, this will become effective. So that's how each one focuses on which word is dafka, is the chaim dafka, or the mita dafka, mavet dafka, and then whichever word you think is dafka, you have to explain why he used the other terms. According to Shmuel, he used the term chaim dafka, means that it's effective now, and mavet is just to come to say, me'atav yadulam. According to Rav, no, mavet is the dafka word, meaning that he meant that has to be that way, meaning that the gift is only granted when I die. And the chayim is an indication of that I should live and be well. It's just an indication of a simon. So Amar never died, and there I come along, Rav. The loch is like Rav. So even though generally the loch is like Shmuel when it comes to dinim and mononos, over here the loch is kavate de Rav. It happens to be that the Rabbeinu Tam in the last Tosfos that comes up at the top of the Amud wants to suggest also in some of these other cases that the Rav, the Aloch is like Rav. Tosfos disagrees, but the Rabbeinu Tam suggests such a thing. That in some of these instances here, it might be that Rav, the Aloch is like Rav as opposed to Shmuel. In this case, it's clear that that is. So Amar Rava, And Rava says, ba kana. If instead of using the word bichayim ubimavet, he says mechayim, from the time I'm alive, then it works. So what Rava is basically indicating is that it's true, when you say bichayim ubimavet, then you can explain bichayim to mean that it's simply a siman or a siman tov. But if he says mechayim, I want it to work, mechayim, from when I'm alive, that's clearly a mandat bari, and even Rav would agree in this case. So Amar Meimar Leitil Chasal Kavosu de Rava, it's clear that Alocha is not like Rava. So Amar Leitil Chasal Kavosu de Rava, of course, what do you mean? The Alocha is like Rav, the Hamrei Nardai, Hil Chasal Kavosu de Rava. The Alocha is like Rav, so why do you have to tell me the Alocha is not like Rava if we know the Alocha is like Rav? So Madutim, I would have thought Mechayim Modei Rav. No, Mechayim, that Rava is not coming to argue on Rav, but rather to explain or to narrow the position of Rav. That Rav only says his position when it says Mechayim. But when he says Mechayim, Rav would agree to me and say that Mechayim means that it's from now, it's a matnat barin, happens right away. So Kamash Malon, that's not the case. That when we say a late halacha, when a member says late halacha to the Rav, it means that Rav doesn't hold of that. So what we see from this is that, number one, the Nardai paskin like Rav, and even Rava paskins like Rav. I mean, Rava, who's a Batra, paskins like Rav over here because he agrees with Rav's position that Mavet means after death, that it's Matnat Shchimra. It's only when he changes the Lashon to Mechayim does he suggest otherwise. But that means if he said Bichayim according to Rava, it would be like Rav's Halacha. So we have Rava saying the Halacha is like Rav with the modification. We have the Nardai saying the Halacha is like Rav. And again, Mameimar, who says Halacha is not like Rav, is also saying Halacha is like Rav. So if all these parties saying Halacha is like Rav, so over here we'll paskin like Rav, even though in generally in Hilchos Mamonos, we will paskin like Shmuel. So how ad ata coming to Rav Nachman le Nardo? This individual came before Rav Nachman in Nardo. Shadre le kamei de Rav Yirmiyah ba'avos. So Rav Nachman was a Talmud of Shmuel, and this is in the city of Shmuel, not even necessarily when Shmuel is still alive necessarily, but it's in the city of Shmuel, and they came before Rav Nachman. It was a case like this, a case where it had written Mechayim ubimavet. So now he didn't want a paskin. Why didn't he want a paskin? He says it's not right for me to paskin in the city of Shmuel as a Talmud of Shmuel to paskin like Rav. So what did he do instead? He said Shadri the Kamei Rabbi Yirmiyah ba'avo l'shum tamia. He sent the case to Rabbi Yirmiyah. He mended the case to Rabbi Yirmiyah ba'avo in a place called the Shum Tamia. So he sent it away from here. Because Amar Hocha Atra the Shmuel Heichan Avid Kavate the Rav, I can't. Even though the Locha is like Rav, I'm not comfortable doing that in the city of Shmuel, as well as the fact that Rav Nachman is also a Talmid of Shmuel. So even though the Locha is like Rav, he said that it was still not Orach Aro. It's not Derech Eretz to do such a thing in the city of Shmuel and as a Talmid of Shmuel. So now, Hayid Ati the Kamei de Rava. It was a case where someone came before Rava. Avad le Rava Kishmate. Now, the contract said like Mechayim. Mechayim, Rava says, that's enough to say that it's a Matnat Bari, and you can't back out of the contract. So Rava was gonna paskin like his Shmate, like he suggests. So this contract came before him. A woman had granted a gift and written Mechayim in it, and then she had survived. She hadn't passed away. So now she comes and she wants to revoke the gift or renege on the gift because she didn't pass away. But Rava believes, according to his Shita, that Mechayim means that she granted it as a Matnat Bari. If she granted it a Matnat Bari, she can't back out of it. So I have a Kartir delay. She was putting pressure on him and bothering him about this. So I'm going to lay the Rav the Rav Chanan Safrei. He said to Rav Papa, the son of Rav Chanan, his sofer, Zil Katavla, just write her what she wants, write in the document that she's entitled to renege or to back out of the contract. But at the end of the contract, write, Sochar Lam Omit An, right? Write this Mishnah from Baba Metzia. And the case in Baba Metzia is when someone backs out of a deal, when they back out of the deal, then at their expense, you can hire other employees to work on their behalf, or you can do it and place the burden of the cost on them. So there we know that this is a case of reneging or a case of where someone backed out. So he did that because he wanted to indicate to any Dayan who saw the contract would know that this contract is not real. The Rava just did it to get this woman off his back. The halacha is, according to Rava, that Mechayim is it was a manat bari, and he wasn't willing to give her back her gift. So he wrote her a contract just to release her, to have her not bother him anymore. But the bottom of the contract, he sent a hint, or he gave a message to other Dayanim, that in a case where someone backs out of what they're supposed to do, this is then they pay the cost. So when they see that at the bottom of the contract, they would know that he would just did this to be mavriach, to take this woman away from him, but not because that was the halacha. So Amra, she got wind of this, and she understood what he was doing, and says, L'dva arbe, atuye kamitaitli. She says, listen, your boat should sink, or you should sink in your boat, because what, you're trying to trick me over here? You're trying to deceive me over here? I know that you're not writing it. I understand what you're doing here, and what you're doing is not right. So she got upset at Rava, and she said that his boat should sink. So they went, Amshino the Mane, they took his clothing, the Rava Bamaya, they went, took his clothing, and they dipped it, they soaked it in water, in order that the klala that she gave them should come true, but come true in a way that wasn't difficult for Rava, wouldn't cause any problems for Rava. So they went and they took his clothes, dumped him in the water to like simulate as if he had been, you know, his boat had sunk, and therefore it would take away the klala. But nevertheless, he wasn't saved from a boat sinking or from drowning. I'm not sure, the Gemara doesn't explicate on this or on the case where this happened or whether it did happen to Rava, but it seems like that whatever this, as the Rashbam says, that al tieh klalat hejot kalabeinecha, you can't take lightly what people say when they curse, and Rava had to take it, he tried to take it seriously, he tried to do something to simulate being drowned so he could take the curse off of him, but nevertheless, it seems like it still affected him in this case. And it might be because Rava maybe didn't, even though Rava was right, according to the way he paskined, Rava was right, and that he was just trying to have the woman leave him, but maybe he didn't handle it in the best situation, so therefore the curse still stuck with him, even though what he had done was, in a sense, right, because he was paskining like himself, but then somehow he lost the human element of it, which is trying to deal with this woman, or trying to placate this woman, or sending her to another Beis Din, who maybe didn't paskin like Rava, and then they could have handled it over there. So the curse stayed with him, even though they had done this, they had soaked his clothes. Okay, now we have a new Mishnah. The new Mishnah says, Lo katav ba shchemira. If we have a contract, it's a gift, but the gift doesn't indicate in it that it was a gift of a shchemira. Because usually in a gift or in a contract that it says that this was gifted to the individual, last will and testament, the deity key, when a person writes that, they say that he was halakatsi, or he was sick, rami barse, and he was laying on his bed, meaning that he was laying on his deathbed. So that's incorporated in the language of the contract. Now true, if it was a healthy gift, to a person who was healthy and granting a gift, over there we said also that ked mahalich al raglohi. That whenever you write a gift like that, you say, well, he's still walking on his feet. Mean to, as opposed to a case where it's a shchemira, by a case of a healthy gift, they did each of these lishonot to indicate what type of contract is. If it says that he is sick and lying on his bed, then we know it's a matnat shchemira. If it says in the contract that he is up walking on his feet, then it's a matnat bari. But this gift or this contract is missing either one of those lishonot, so therefore we don't know what it is. The individual, the grantor of the gift, says, I was a shchemira and I can renege, I'm healthy now, I can back out of the deal. V'hein omrim, and the recipients of the gift, bari ayita, you were healthy and you gave us a matnat bari. So now who? Tzarich lavir haya sheshchemira haya. Divrei Rabbi Meir. Remember it says, he's got to bring a proof that he's a shchemira. Right now he's standing in front of us, he looks like a healthy guy. Now he's got to prove that he was a shchemira. Wait, the possessions, the items belong to him. They're with him now. And if you want to come and extract them from him, you have to bring a proof that it was a matnat bari. Because the chazakah is that they're his possessions. The chazakah is that they're with him right now. So if that's the case, you want to take them away from them, you have to bring a proof. We'll discuss what that proof is in tomorrow's daf. How matna? Tahata kavtov ba. There was a gift that was given. This is a matnat shchemera. And this matnam shimra written it kava kotzir v'rami ba'arsei. Says that the person was sick and in his deathbed. But lo katav ba doesn't finish off that language. It doesn't finish off. Migomer e iptar the Beit Olamei. That through this sickness he passed away and went to his, you know, to Beit Olamei, back to the world, to Olam Haba. So the lishonot of a daidiki, where he gives an instruction, and then the edim afterwards are writing the document to document the gift of matnat shchemira. Generally, they would write this in the matnat shchemira. They would say that he was sick on his deathbed, and then he passed away. So this document only says that he was sick, but it doesn't say that he passed away. So now they have this contract is coming up. So now Tosus points out over here that not that the Yorshim are coming and saying that he got healthy and then he reneged on the deal, that he went ahead and was chuzer bo, that he reneged on it, but rather the fact that he gets healthy is an automatic reneging or retraction of the gift. You can see that in Tosus, the Yorshim ayutonim shamad. The Yorshim say no. The recipient of the gift says he passed away and the gift is that the monies are mine because that was a matnat shchemira. The inheritors or the people who would have otherwise been Yorshim say no. He got up, he was healthy. If he's healthy, the matnat shchemira was invalidated. If it's invalidated, then it belongs to us. So now he says, Vaday kevin shama, that they say, Vafo pishlo ayutonim shechazar bo, they don't explicitly say that he backed out or he reneged on the deal. The Vaday kevin shama nistama Vaday chazar bo. Because automatically we assume, if he was walking around, if he got healthy, that's an automatic chazara in your Madat Shkivi, Vafo pishlo mar befeirush. Even if you don't say it explicitly. So that's what Tosel says here. They didn't come with a claim that he reneged or he retracted his gift, simply that he was healthy. And by being healthy, automatically that invalidates the matnat shkimira. So you have the recipient of the gift saying he was a died. It says in the contract he was a shkimira and he died. And the Yerushim are coming and say, no, he got healthy and he walked around. So now, Amar Rabba says, Hare mate, Vare kvaro, mochia chalav. Right, where's this guy right now? This guy is dead right now, and he's in his grave. So now what do you want to talk about? The contract says that he was on his deathbed, about to die, and we know right now, if you come to us right now, we know where he is. He's in his kever, and he's dead. So the best, from the circumstantial evidence, the best thing to say is that he passed away from that sickness. I mean, if you want to undermine that, if you want to change that, you've got to come along and bring a proof that that's not the case. We have evidence of a contract that says he's on his deathbed. We have evidence that he's dead. We'll put the two and two together, and that means that he died from that sickness. So you, the Yorshim, want to say that he got healthy. You bring evidence of that. Amalei Baye. Hashtor. Baye says, wait a minute. Hashtor. Masfina shiruban avad. So here is a case where a boat sinks in the ocean. It goes down the ocean. Then we don't know what happened to the people on board. People aboard, we don't know if they survived or they died. So there, the Mara says, that we are suspicious that they might have survived, and we're suspicious that they might have died. We give them the Chumrah in both directions. So for instance, if it's a Bat Yisrael that's married to a Kohen, who has no children from him, she's entitled to eat Truma because she's married to her husband. So we'll say, no, if her husband was on this boat, we'll assume that he was dead and she can no longer eat Truma. So we'll give her a Chumrah v'chaim. What happens again if it's a Bat Kohen married to Israel? A Bat Kohen that's married to Israel can no longer eat Truma. If she has no children and her husband passed away, she'll have to go back to her father's house and continue to eat Truma. So over here, we'll give her a Chumrah that she's alive. We'll assume that the Israel is alive and she's not entitled to go back to Chazra le Beit Avia and she can't eat Truma. So again, in the case of a boat where it sinks, we give a Chumrah. We assume that in both directions. We assume that they're dead if it's a Chumrah and we assume they're alive if it's a Chumrah. Whichever is the Tzad Chumrah, we assume they're alive or dead. So here, wait a minute. By a Sfina Shuvan Abad, in general, when a boat sinks, almost everybody dies. Survivors are very rare. Nevertheless, we still say, we still say that we're choshesh, that they might have survived. Cholin, Shirov Cholin Chaim Lo Koshkin. We're talking about someone who's sick, and most people are sick, get better. Most people are sick, they survive, they get better, and they get up from it. So why won't we be suspicious over here that he might have survived? Meaning that if you're going to be suspicious in the case of a boat, where it's unlikely he survived, then you're suspicious over here. Where the likelihood is that he did survive, why won't we say that he got healthy in between? Right, eventually everybody dies. That's right. Everybody in the world dies eventually, but that doesn't mean that he didn't get healthy from when he was sick and then died later. You have no evidence from that. So, Amar Rav Huna, Berei the Rav Yeshua, Kaman Az LaHashmaita did the Rabba. Rabba's position over here, who does that go like? The Rabba, what is Rabba's position? Basically, Rabba's position is Batar Hashta Az Linan. We go after what the circumstances are in front of us right now. Whatever is in front of us, whatever evidence we have in front of us right now, meaning the status quo of whatever is in front of us, that will dictate exactly, right, what we're going to think. So right now, this man has passed away, and we have a contract that said that he was deathly ill, or he was sick. And so we're going to put two and two together. So we go about the hashta. Who says similar to him? So he says, "Rabbi Natan." It's like Rabbi Natan. The Tanya, you have a brisa. Mi motzi miyad mi. Who is able to take from one or the other? So what's the case here? The case here is a matana shenka tuba lo shaman apariv lo shaman achkemira. Case where there's no evidence in the document whether it was a matnat shkemira or a matnat bari. Like a case like our Mishnah. Just like our Mishnah. And one of them says, I was healthy. And the other one says that he was a shkemira. So it depends. Is he? So the question is, what was his status? Was his status that he was a bari, and was a man not bari, and he can't back out of it? Or was a man not shkemira, and he is able to renege or retract the deal? So mi, motzi, miyad mi. Who has the upper hand here? So the first opinion of Rabbi Yaakov is, who motzi miyad dehem? He, meaning that the grantor of the gift, is able to take it back for them, below raya, without any proof. But if they want to get the recipients of the gift, they have to bring proof that he was actually gave it as a matnat shchimira. So the burden of proof is on the recipients to show that he was a shchimira. Whereas for him, he can take it back because he's the grantor of the gift. If he's the grantor of the gift, he has the chazaka of the possessions. If he has the chazaka, then he can retain or keep the possessions. So therefore, by the way, it's automatic. Like obviously, if he doesn't have to bring proof to take it back, then they do have to bring proof. Or if they do have to bring proof, and then he doesn't, it's two sides of the same coin, even though they say both sides of this. So he can take it back because he's muchzak in it. And they, if they want to take it away from him, they're going to have to bring a proof to take away from him. But on the other hand, Rabbi Natan Omer im barihu, if he's standing in front of us and he's healthy, he's got to bring a proof to us that he was once a shchemira. Im shchemira, who if he's right now a shchemira, aleim levi raya shebariyaya. Then the other party has to bring proof that he was a bari. So again, the case is here, what is Rabbi Natan saying? Rabbi Natan is basically saying, but the hashazlinim, we look at the person who's standing in front of us, person who's standing in front of us, if he's a bari, then we assume that he was always healthier. That's the case. That's his status. His status is that of a healthy person. If you want to change his status, you're going to have to bring evidence of the fact that he was a shkemira. So if he's a bari, we assume that he was a bari all along. If you want to say that you're a shchemira, you got to prove that you were once a shchemira. On the other hand, if he's a shchemira right in front of us now, then we assume that was his status all along, that he was always a shchemira. And if you want to say that he was healthy or was a matnat bari, you're going to have to bring evidence to the fact that he was a bari. So Rabbi Natan says, we don't go batar chazaka, but we go batar hashtazlinan. And that's the same as the position of Rabba. Rabba's position is that we have a contract that says he was a shchemira. We have him in the grave right now, dead or passed away. So Batar Hashtazlinan, we look at his status right now, is dead. You want to change him from being dead to being alive, meaning that you want to say that he survived or that he got better, you're going to have to bring evidence to that fact. So we have Rabbo and Rabbi Natan saying the same thing, which is Batar Hashtazlinan. We go after what the current status is, and we go after the here and now. And if you want to change the status quo of the here and now, you've got to bring evidence to that fact. So now we have a statement. Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar says, this similar machloket about Batar Hashtazlinan or Batar Chazaka Azlinan, we have the same type of idea by Tumah, the Tanan. We have a Mishnah. Bik'a bimot chama, a valley full of large fields, in the summertime, is a Rishut Yachid the Shabbat, or Rishut Rabim the Tumah. Is a classification as a Rishut Yachid when it comes to Shabbos, and for Tumah, it has a classification of Rishut Rabim. We'll discuss what this means in a second. Bimot HaKshamim, in the rainy season, Rishut Yachid Lekan Ulekan. Then it's a Rishut Yachid both for Shabbos and for Tumah. So let's discuss Tumah first. Tumah, we know that whenever there's a Safek Tumah, there's any doubt about something that happened in Tumah, whether the field was Tameh, or there was one field that was Tameh, and he doesn't know if he went through that field, or there's a Safek about any Tumah, we call that a Safek Tumah. That Safek Tumah, if it's Rishut Yachid, is Tameh. If the area is classified as Rishut Yachid, Safek Tumah Rishut Yachid, we go to Chumrah and Tameh. Safek Tumah Rishut Rabim. On the other hand, if something Safek Tumah in Rishut Rabim, we go to Kula and we say he is Tahor. We learn that out. The Gemara in Sota learns that. We learn it out from the Dinim of Sota that Safek Rishut Rabim is Tahor, Safek Rishut Yachid is Tameh. So that would be the difference. In the Mota Chama, it's classified as a Rishut Rabim. So therefore, Savek Tuma will be Lekula, will be Letahar. On the other hand, in the Mimot HaKshamim, where it said Dinab, Rishut Yachid B'Tuma, it will be Savek Tuma Rishut Yachid. There we go, Lechumar will be Tamei. So now, why is it that in the Mot HaChama, in the summertime, it's a Rishut Rabim, and in the wintertime, it is a Rishut Yachid? So a number of reasons given from the Gaonim, from the Rabbeinu Chanan, the Rabbeinu Gershom, the Tosfot, and the Rashbam all give different reasons. We can and we'll combine them. But basically, during the summertime, number one, in the summertime, the fields are dry. It's not all wet and muddy. So people walk through there because it's not an inconvenience to walk through the fields. It's easy to walk through hardened fields or paths because there's no mud there. So that's number one. Number two is Bimot HaChama, there is nothing planted there. They already harvested the crops. And so when you walk through there, you're not doing any damage. It's not difficult to walk through there because there's nothing planted in the field. And number three is there's no stira, like the Rashbam says, it's not covered up. There's nothing covered over there. There's nothing blocking the way. So therefore, in the Bimot HaChama, that's a Rishut HaRabim. Otherwise, in the Bimot HaKshamim, in the rainy season, it's a Rishut HaYachid because you have all the mitigating factors the other way. Number one, it's muddy. It rains a lot. It's muddy. Nobody's going to want to walk through there. Number two is the Tavuah is planted and you're going to ruin the Tavuah. It makes it difficult to walk through there because there is some crops that are placed in the field. So either you don't want to damage the crops, or on the other hand, the crops make it difficult to walk through. And number three is the Rishbam says it's a Makom Stira now because there are crops growing there. It's a place where people don't regularly go. Plus, it's maybe hidden or covered because the crops are growing. So all of those cases make it a Rishut Yachid in the rainy season, in the winter, and a Rishut HaRabim in the summer season. Now, with regards to Shabbos, it's always classified as a Rishut Yachid. What is the case here? The Rashbam claims the case here is where it's mukufot choma. That it was, there was a gedder, there was a fence around the field, and that's why it makes it into a reshut yachid, because there's a fence around it. Truthfully, and Tosfos quotes is that in the Gemara and Shabbos, it's actually a machloket amoraim, why it's classified as reshut yachid here. Either like the Rashbam says, one amora says it's like that, which is that it's fenced in, and therefore it has a real din of reshut yachid. Or the other possibility in the Gemara there is that it's a case of a big'ah that was not surrounded, and it's really a karmelit. So, why do they call it a Rishut Yachid? Because it's not called a Rishut Rabim. Rishut Yachid means as opposed to Rishut Rabim. It's not a Rishut Rabim, therefore they call it a Rishut Yachid. But not like a Rishut Yachid, meaning that the Rabbanan defined as a Rishut Yachid. But rather, Rishut Yachid means that it's not Rishut Rabim. It could be a Carmelite, it could be a Rishut Yachid. In this case, it happens to be a Carmelite. So that case is for when it comes to Shabbos, it's Rishut Yachid on both sides. Now, what does this mean? What do we see from this Mishnah? Or how is this similar to the machlokas that we saw above? Well, it really depends on how you view whether you go butter hashta as linan or whether you go butter chazaka as linan. If you go butter chazaka as linan, if we go after the chazaka, what's the status of the individual? The individual has a chezkas Torah. So if he has a chezkas Torah, we're going to rely on the chezkas Torah, and whether it's in the winter or whether it's in the summer, it's not going to matter because he has a chazaka of being a tahor. And therefore, he will always be classified as a tahor. So that's like Rabbi Yaakov. Rabbi Yaakov is going to say, just like by the case of Matnat Shchimera or Matnat Bari, where we have the doubt about it, he's going to say, but what the chazakas, the possessions are with the grantor. If you want to remove him from them, you got to bring evidence to the fact that he was granting them as a Matnat Bari. So, also here in Tumah, the chazaka of the individual is tahor, so he'll be tahor until we have evidence or edim that suggests otherwise. If you have edim, fine. But if you don't, then he will leave him with his cheskas tehorah. On the other hand, Rabbi Nachman says, batar ashtaz lina, and we look at the current status. So here, again, if he's healthy right now, the grantor is healthy, then he's got to prove that he was a shchemira. If the grantor is currently a shchemira, then you got to prove that he was healthy at the other time. If you want to change what the status quo is now, then you go after it. So too here by the Tumah. By the Tumah over here, it will depend. We look at what the current status is. If the field, it's the summertime, then we assume that he keeps his cheskas Torah, because in the summertime it's classified as a reshut rabim, and therefore his chazaka, plus you have a safek reshut rabim, is tahor. Whereas, if it's the wintertime, where a safek reshut yachid is tameh, then we go about the hashtag, we say it's the rainy season, a safek reshut yachid is tameh, you're going to be tameh. Your chazaka won't dictate over here, the safek reshut yachid will dictate, because then we go about the hashtag. So that's the statement of Rabbi Elazar, that the machlok is by Tum'ah, not by Shabbos, but simply by Tum'ah, is the same. Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Natan would argue, just like they argue by a contract, a gift, they would also argue over here by Tum'ah. Now, Rava comes and makes a statement, and here is Machlokas, three of the Machlokas about what Rava is stating. There's the Rashbam, the Rabbeinu Chananel, and the Tosfot, the Ri. So, we'll read it as the Rashbam first. Rava is now making an independent statement. It has nothing to do with what happened before. I'm a Rava, lo shanu lo avru alea yemota kishamim. That is only in a case where the Yemota kishamim haven't passed yet. Aval avru alea yemota kishamim, reshut ayichid, the kanu lekan. If a winter has already passed by, it's a reshut ayichid both for Tum'ah and for Shabbat. What does that mean? The Rashbam, Lashitato, believes here that the case is a bika'ah that's surrounded by a wall. So he says, listen, when is it the case that the bika'ah is classified as a reshut rabim for Tum'ah? That's only the first time, the first summer that goes by. But once one winter has passed by, then it becomes classified as a reshut yachid forever. That its status will change from a reshut rabim to a reshut yachid. I can never lose that status of reshut yachid. So even in the following summer, it'll still be classified as a reshut yachid because it passed through one yemot ha-gishamim. So that's the way the Rashbam learns it. The Rashbam quotes then the Rabbeinu Chananel, who said that Rava is not making an independent statement, but arguing on Rabbi Elazar. He's arguing on Rabbi Elazar and saying, no, that, or in this case, the Rava says that you're not explaining the machlokas right. That what you're saying over here about Rishut Rabbim, Rishut Yachid is only true when there was no, right, Yemot HaGishamim. But once there's Yemot HaGishamim has passed, then it's always suffix Tuma Rishut Yachid, whether for a Shabbos or for Tumah. So now that Rav is making an independent statement or just qualifying the statement, but rather he's arguing with Rav Elazar and says, Rav Elazar, your differentiation is not right. Your differentiation is very limited, and that's only true when the first time, once the Yemot HaGishamim passed, then it turns into a Reshut HaYachid forever. Now both of them have a similar idea, which is that Rav is positing a position, where once you pass to Rishut Yachid, you can't lose that status of Rishut Yachid. And that's on that. Tosafot says, Tema Gdolahi. Where do they ever get such a thing? Where do we ever find such a thing that an item, once it becomes Rishut Yachid, can never revert back, or once it passes to Rimot HaKashamim? But what does it have to do? He has other questions, but the major, first of his question is that, when I first read Rava, I would have thought that it meant that Rava says, once you pass through the Mot Kashamim, for instance, if you had a safek, something happened, and you had a safek about what happened, and then you come to court. Now, when you come to court, are you coming after Yimot HaGshamim? So fine, the case happened back in the summertime, but when you came to court, it already passed through Yimot HaGshamim. So now to say Bata Hashtaz Linan is no longer relevant. It's relevant when you say Bata Hashtaz Linan if you're coming to court the same time that the case happened. But if you're coming to court much later on, after the rainy season, then I would suggest that it's already not relevant Bata Hashtaz Linan anymore, because Bata Hashtaz, who cares that it's a rainy season now? Who cares? Oh, now it's a summer now, later on. But Hashtav, you already passed through a winter and a summer. It shouldn't make any difference about what was Batar Hashto, because Hashto is no longer relevant anymore. That's the way I read it. The rereads it, someone like that, a little different, but similar to that. If you look at the top, it's the Tosfos on the top of Kuf Nun Dalet Amud Aleph. V'nira l'ri, the Ria, the Farish, that it says, Lo Shna D'Bikar Shut Arbim L'Tuma, Ela Shlo Avru Ala Yimot HaKshamim. It's only when the winter hasn't passed. Perish, Ala Tuma Shnoda. The Ri says that, wait, when did this Safek Tuma arise? Did the Safek Tuma arise in the summer? Or did the Safek Tuma arise in the winter? But once a winter has passed by with this Safek Tuma existing, then the Safek is no longer about Batar Hashtaz Linan. Why? Because then we don't know if the individual walked through when it was summer, and we don't know if the individual walked through if it was in the winter. He comes before us and says, look, I walked through the field, and right now it's the summertime. So we'll say, okay, Batar Hashtaz, okay, so we'll say Safek Tuma Rishut Arbim Yatahor. But you know what? The Tuma was a Safek, and it existed already in the winter and in the summer, and we have no idea when you walked through there. So Batar Hashtaz should have no impact on when the person possibly walked through there. Right? Otherwise, or, again, the other way around, if he comes in the winter time, if the Safek only existed, meaning that the Safek Tuma only existed in the summertime, and then he comes before us, so we'll say, listen, all right, so the Safek Tuma only existed here, so that should be a Safek Tuma Rishut Rabim. So again, we'll continue to read the read. Perish, al Tumash no dash lo avru alav Yimot HaGshamim. So long as the Tuma wasn't there in the fields for a part of time that was Yimot HaGshamim. Mishavah Risham, v'lo yadayim b'mot HaChama nichnas b'mot HaGshamim. He doesn't know when he went in there, nichnas. Shim ba lishol lefen, and now he comes to ask us, yesh alav l'choshva Rishut Rabim. We should go after Rishut Rabim. The Batar Hashtaz Linan, we look at what the current state is. Avalim avru alav Yimot HaGshamim, meaning that the Tuma was already known that there was a Safek Tuma, and a winter passed by. Again, he doesn't know when he entered the field, right? So then, Mishabas Feka Avru Alah Yimot Kshamim Afilu Hu Ba Lishol Bimot Chama. If he comes in the summertime, Rishut Yachid the Tuma. Like a mirror, Batar Hashtaz Linan. Again, Batar Hashtaz is not relevant anymore. Kevin Shekarov Lo Lemot Kshamim Yoter. We just passed by the wintertime. Ah, it was the summertime before that, and now it's the summertime? Who says he walked through in the summer? He could have walked through in the winter. So the read does a similar formulation to what I was trying to suggest here in Rava's position, which is that the Safek, or Batar Hashtaz, is only relevant when you come before the court, close or proximate to the time that the case happened. Then you can say, Batar Hashtaz, we assume that that's when he went through. Now you're coming up to ask us about it, we assume you went through at this time. But if there's an extended period of time between the time that he had the Safek, and now he's showing up in court, say, Batar Hashtaz, Linan, why is that relevant? I mean, there's a Gemot HaGshamim is closer to you than the Gemot HaChama that was beforehand. I mean, the Safek Tuma existed for a long period of time. The Ri is explaining it about the Tuma itself, whether it was known to be there. I was just suggesting that if the person has a Safek that existed a long time ago, then again, saying Batar Hashtaz anymore, the status quo or the Chazakah has changed numerous times. Why should it matter anymore what Batar Hashtaz Lina? Obviously, the read says what he says. Now, what I said, because he wants to be that there is no. If you know for certain that you walked in the Mot HaChama, and it's, then again, that's the status quo. That's the Batar Hashtaz Linan. Even though you show up in court at a much later time, that's the Batar Hashtaz Linan. So the read to create that situation says, has to be that the Safek of the Tuma existed over more than one season. And therefore, you're uncertain as to which season you entered. And if you're uncertain about one season, we're not going to just assume, because now it's a season, that any impact on when you entered. That has no relevance to when you entered, and therefore we'll follow the din of Chazakah. Okay, we'll stop over here.